It was a year with so many moving parts in politics, a year with so many political consequences that over at NPR's Political Brain Trust, they created an NCAA-style March Madness bracket for political stories. I scanned that bracket and how they creatively pitted stories against each other. And on this hour of the morning show, I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're breaking down 2017 with Scott Ross. He's executive director of the liberal advocacy organization One Wisconsin Now. Scott, welcome to the show.
Hey, Kate, how's it going?
It's going well. So let's start with January. President Trump is inaugurated. And how would you evaluate President Trump's first year in office and some of the milestones that we've seen unfold in the months of 2017?
Well, I think that America got a good preview of what many people were saying the Donald Trump presidency would be like from literally the inauguration. Moreover, Sean Spicer claiming afterwards, despite photographic evidence to the contrary, that Trump had the biggest inauguration ever. I think that was how this administration got off the ground, and it has been a disaster ever since for the American people, that is for sure.
Well, let's expound a little bit on, you mentioned Sean Spicer and buildup of the inauguration. Many people watched the inauguration. And what then unfolded, as you see, in the early months of the Trump presidency?
Well, literally an inability to get anything done and the constant barrage of pettiness, incendiary comments, and such that you know really spewed forth from the administration. You know, Trump would whine that he didn't have a honeymoon, but the reason he didn't have a honeymoon is because no other occupant of the White House entered the White House spewing as many lies, as much racism, as much xenophobia, as much divisiveness. Usually, when somebody takes the oath of office, they try and bring the country together. You know, and that's what governance is about. Listen, campaigns can be divisive. You know, you're breaking off enough pieces to get to 50% plus one, which is something that, you know, obviously Donald Trump did not get because Hillary Clinton got 3 million more votes than he did. But after the election, governance is about bringing people together to find common solutions to try and move this nation or move a body forward, and that is not what has happened. And again, I think it could not be more embodied by the fact that we spent days debating, you know, again, against all other evidence that Trump's, you know, was obsessed with the size of his crowd for the inauguration. And again, I think that's, you know, that's what a lot of people talked about before he was ever, before he ever won the Electoral College, that he was going to be this kind of person and this kind of leader. And he has proven to be even worse than anybody could have imagined.
What kind of year did Twitter have?
It was robust. I mean, listen, Twitter is a, you know, can be useful for folks getting out opinions they want to say, but again, they are only opinions, and so many of those opinions can be just utterly bereft of any kind of facts or relationship to the to planet Earth as we know it. And I think, you know, certainly Trump was one of those, one of the inflictors of a lack of fact on the body politic. I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, it's as though we've been living in this constant crisis mode where people are wondering whether or not they'll wake up and we'll have declared war against another nation via Trump's Twitter because he happens to be up typing.
Well, let's leapfrog all the way to December now, and Congress has passed a major comprehensive tax code bill called the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, biggest tax overhaul in 30 years. You've called the tax bill the biggest transfer of wealth in American history from the middle class and poor people to the rich. Can you expand on that?
Absolutely. I mean, listen, people are not stupid. They see what is happening, and even though, you know, leaders like Paul Ryan and Ron Johnson and Trump are claiming that somehow this is a tax break that's going to help the middle class and poor people, it is garbage. I mean, by, you know, first of all, it's not a job creation bill. This bill is not going to create jobs. This bill is going to create more wealth and more wealth inequality. The biggest problem that America has is wealth inequality. The fact that, like, the super rich have so much of our treasury, and people who need money don't have money because of the way that our tax code had already been set up. And this is going to only make that problem worse. By 2027, 83% of these tax cuts are going to the top 1%. It is an incontrovertible fact. They are going to get, the rich are going to get 1/5 of the tax cuts for 2018, and that grows to 83% by 2027. We're going to see, 92 million middle-class families are going to have their taxes raised by 2027. This is going to result in massive cuts to things like Medicare. I think that it mandates at least $25 billion in cuts to Medicare in 2018 and $400 billion over the next 10 years. And let's not forget that it increases health care premiums and leaves 13 million families without health care coverage by what they did with the Affordable Care Act. The worst part of all is, again, we're not going to have money to finance the priorities that we all need as a nation, because they want to cut the taxes for Donald Trump's heirs to take his fortune, or whatever that fortune is. And that's where I think this is the most dangerous, because there is a myth which exists, and the myth that exists in Republican minds is there is not a problem which exists in America that a tax cut cannot solve. And this came about because of the 1980s, the fact that Reagan cut taxes in 1981 and he cut taxes in 1986 somehow spurred this enormous economic boon for the United States. But that is a myth. A complete and total myth. And in fact, if you look at actual gross domestic product growth, and I'm boring your listeners right now, I'm sure, by throwing out all these dumb numbers, but the fact is that our GDP growth was 2 points higher in the 1970s than it was in the 1980s. And in fact, after Bill Clinton passed his tax cut increase in 1993 on the richest Americans, our GDP growth was even higher than it was in the 1970s, which again was higher than the 1980s, and the lowest decade of growth came after all of George Bush's tax cuts in the 2000s.
So what you're saying is trickle-down economics isn't all it's cut out to be?
Trickle-down economics is probably, they used to say in the 1980s, I guess in case any of your listeners are old enough to remember the 1980s, they used to say that cocaine was the big lie. Trickle-down economics was the true big lie of the 1980s, that is for sure. And it has continued, 30 years later.
And we're talking with Scott Ross right now, executive director of the liberal advocacy organization One Wisconsin Now, in this half hour. And you can join the conversation. What do you think of President Trump's first year in office? Was it what you expected? Was it what you hoped for? What do you think of the new tax plan? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Do you think the tax plan will help or hurt the economy? 800-642-1234. Scott, the U.S. has the highest corporate tax rate in the industrialized world, according to the Tax Foundation. Those in favor of the tax bill argue that permanently lowering the corporate tax rate will create jobs, foster economic growth, and boost wages. In reaction to the bill's passage, AT&T announced it will give $1,000 bonuses to over 200,000 employees. Comcast and other companies also announced that they'll be giving out bonuses and hiring new employees. In the short term, individuals will also receive tax cuts. So what's not to like there?
Well, here's the thing. As soon as you saw the first story about AT&T saying that they were going to give their employees some sort of give back as a result of the tax bill, then you saw a couple other corporations. The fact is that AT&T in particular, and this one's got a bite for Wisconsin, workers in Wisconsin. At the very same time this happened, AT&T announced that it's cutting 600 jobs in six states in the Midwest, including in Wisconsin, and that I think they're now to the point where they're saying, like, there's going to be about 1,000 workers who are going to lose their jobs beginning early next year. So this is a total myth. And the fact is the AT&T bonuses were negotiated as part of union negotiations with the Communication Workers of America. I don't think it's any surprise that Comcast, again, this was a propaganda effort, right? Because after the tax bill was signed into law, you saw 3 or 4 corporations come out and say it. All of them had financial interest in, one, getting these giant corporate tax breaks, but you had a couple of the telecom companies like Comcast and Verizon who, and AT&T, who all wanted, you know, an end to net neutrality, which is something they're also getting as a result of the Trump administration.
Net neutrality, also a political milestone, if you will, during 2017. It's that time of year when we take stock. We're rewinding on the year in politics, and what a ride it's been. Congress started the year with a real estate developer turned reality TV star winning the presidency, and nearly a dozen months later, some members of Congress are still confused at times by President Trump. You're listening to The Morning Show. Scott Ross is our guide in the first half hour. You can join us as well, 800-642-1234. Back after a check of the news. From controversy still unresolved around the 2016 presidential election to a growing number of sexual misconduct allegations that have ramifications in every industry, including politics, we're rewinding on 2017 politics. Fox News just published its look back at the 7 most notable political scandals of the past year. We're taking a look back as well in this hour of The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Foremost on Fox's list, the sexual misconduct against lawmakers at the national, state, and local levels. Post Harvey Weinstein, there's been a surge of women who have stood up against the powerful lawmakers who they said sexually harassed or abused them. We're rewinding 2017 with Scott Ross, executive director of One Wisconsin Now. What do you think of 2017 in politics? What do you think of President Trump's first year in office? What do you make of the Me Too movement and its influence on politics? Do you see it continuing into 2018? What about the tax code overhaul? Does it rise to the top of 2017 most notable political developments? Let's discuss. 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Scott Ross, what do you make of the sexual harassment scandals that have hit Capitol Hill in 2017 and the Me Too movement?
Well, I think, it is critically important that women feel safe in the workplace, that they feel safe in their homes, that they feel safe in their communities. And it is amazing the bravery that folks have been sharing and standing up and making sure that their voice is being heard on this. And I think a lot of it, you know, it's a long time coming. And, you know, as a white guy, what the hell do I have to say about this? Well, you know, the fact is that if we allow people to sit in silence, you know, the problem is just going to continue. And I think a lot of the, you know, and again, you know, my information on this is limited, but I think that the fact that we see in the White House and from the Oval Office such a complete and total disrespect for women uttered on an almost daily basis by the occupant of the White House is in part why a lot of this is coming out, because a lot of people are just sick of seeing and hearing the way that women are being treated by this president. And I think that has a lot to do with it. And hopefully this will continue, because accountability is everything.
The election of Alabama Democrat Doug Jones to the U.S. Senate earlier this month against Republican incumbent Roy Moore was a surprise victory. Do you think that race is indicative of how the 2018 midterms will go for Democrats, or was Jones's victory because of the circumstances surrounding sexual harassment allegations against Moore?
Well, it wasn't just sexual harassment. I mean, he was credibly accused of being a child molester. And despite that fact, there were a lot of Republicans who were still willing to stand up for him. And I think that's part of the problem that we're having, because things have gotten so partisan, you know, that the environment is so toxic that, you know, when things come up, like when Roy Moore first, you know, when the allegations of child molestation first came up against Roy Moore, let's look at what happened here in the state of Wisconsin. Governor Scott Walker was asked about this on television, and he said, if it's true. Ron Johnson, our U.S. senator, said the exact same thing. If it's true, you know, they eventually backed off of those comments and simply said that Roy Moore was unacceptable. But that's part of what's going on here. There is a wink and nod that goes because of the partisanship that at this point in time cannot be tolerated any longer. When you have things like the Charlottesville travesty which happened, and you have our governor point blank asked by the media, do you condemn the fact that Donald Trump compared white supremacists to the people protesting white supremacists? Walker would not answer the question, and I think that's where, you know, if the people of Wisconsin are looking for leadership out of their Republican elected officials to stand up against Donald Trump and the lies and insanity he spews on a daily basis, we are simply not getting it. That may cause a real problem, because if in 2018, for say in the governor's election, Scott Walker thinks that he's got to embrace everything that Donald Trump stands for, says, defend, because he has to hold on to his base. That is a problem for Walker, because Donald Trump is incredibly unpopular and is going to continue to say even more insane things as we get closer to the first sort of big referendum electorally on his time in the White House.
In 2017, we also saw the firing of FBI Director James Comey, which set off a number of other milestones, including the Robert Mueller investigation into Russian meddling in the 2016 election and Trump campaign ties. What about those particular milestones and how we will remember 2017?
Well, I mean, I think that the lack of respect for law enforcement, you know, that Trump, state TV over at Fox News, and Republicans are spewing is very shameful. You know, you're talking about folks who serve the people in a bipartisan fashion, in a nonpartisan fashion, by trying to protect protect the integrity of our elections, protect our streets, whatever, and they're being eviscerated because Donald Trump colluded with Russia to try and steal the election, which he did. And so I think that's where unless all you do is DVR Fox News, chances are you realize that the Republican attacks on law enforcement are bunk.
Critics of the Democratic Party have said it failed to connect with rural and working class voters in the 2016 election. Right after the election, even President Obama said the party failed to give people in rural areas or in exurban areas a sense day to day that they were fighting for them or connected to them. Looking forward, Scott, to the midterms next year, how will Democrats change their strategy?
Well, I think a couple things. One is that, you know, the greatest strength of the Democratic Party is its diversity, whether it's racially, geographically, economically, or ideologically. That is the Democratic Party's greatest strength. And I personally, you know, the comments from former President Obama notwithstanding, I think that there has been a great deal of work which has gone into trying to pretend that we have to divide, you know, that the Democratic Party has a huge problem because it's got urban centers and it's got rural voters, and it can't reconcile both. And I think that's garbage. Here in the state of Wisconsin, whether you live in, you know, Milwaukee, Madison, Rhinelander, Ashland, La Crosse, you know, Horicon, wherever, if you're not a rich person, Scott Walker cutting taxes for rich people and corporations has left you behind. That is a thing which binds all of us, no matter where we live in the state of Wisconsin. And we can keep having people flood rural America to go talk to white Trump voters staring out windows as much as we want. The fact is that Trump is incredibly unpopular. His economic plans are not going to move the country forward. The only people who are going to benefit from the tax cuts that, you know, Paul Ryan and Trump have inflicted on us are Paul Ryan and Trump and their corporate donors. And the simple fact is that there's going to be a backlash of, you know, historic proportions in 2018 as a result of their failure.
So, Scott, as we close with you and we close the books on 2017, what do you think is the one thing we'll remember or the history books will remember about 2017?
That it was the first year of the most disastrous presidency in the history of the United States, but it was followed by, in 2018, an incredible uprising of folks turning back and turning the page on some of this garbage.
Well, Scott, thanks so much for helping us recap the year.
All right, you have a great New Year's.
You too. Scott Ross is executive director of One Wisconsin Now, that is a liberal advocacy organization. Now let's continue this 2017 recap with Republican U.S. Representative Glenn Grothman from Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District in the east central part of the state. Representative Grothman, welcome to the show.
Glad to be on the show, as always.
Well, I want to.
My goodness.
Well, good to talk to you. I want to start here where exactly I started with Scott Ross. How would you, let's rewind back to the inauguration. It's January 2017. How would you evaluate President Trump's first several months in office? What stuck out to you?
Well, I wish you wouldn't tweet so much. And I think that hurts him. Otherwise, I think he inherited quite a few problems. He's taken off and trying to deal with those problems. I think he wrapped things up with the tax cut, which is good. But I think the major thing a president does nowadays is make judicial appointments and deal with administrative law. I think he's got overall a good cabinet, which is doing a good job towards improving the business climate, the economic situation. So overall, except for the fact that he keeps tweeting, I think he's done a good job.
What political fires do you see that he put out successfully?
I don't know exactly what you mean by a political fire.
What were some of the big challenges that he took on, you saw, in this first year that you saw address and be successful at?
Okay, I think he's done a good job of improving the business climate, and you've got to improve the business climate to improve the economy, to make sure everybody's got a job, to make sure that people are making more income than they did a year ago. I think if you look at the stock market, you can see that at least a lot of people out there are optimistic about the future of business, and optimistic means you think more people are going to continue to be hired, and as you hire more people, those people are going to be making more and more money. So he's done a good job there. I think he's done a good job with ISIS. I think he has taken off the handcuffs of our troops and allowed them to go after ISIS more aggressively than they have in the past, which I think is a good thing as well.
Well, let's.
He's also bringing back a little bit of a pride to America.
Let's leapfrog all the way to December when all of the critics said it couldn't be done, the tax code overhaul. Last week, Congress passed the bill that will enact the biggest changes to the tax code since 1986. President Trump said the bill was a Christmas gift for Americans. The bill also provides a significant tax cut for corporations and doubles the estate tax exemption amount. How will this bill benefit various Americans?
Well, two ways. I think the indirect way is the most important way. Like I said, we want to improve the business climate. Even Barack Obama said that he felt the marginal rate for corporations was too high. Yeah. We can't sit there with a marginal tax rate of 35% when so much of the world is at 25%, 15%, so much lower. So I think even if Barack Obama had remained president, this is something he would have wanted to tackle. But it makes our businesses more competitive internationally. The more competitive we are, the more jobs you're going to see in America. The more jobs you see in America, the more it's going to create upward pressure on wages. So the overall improvement of the economy will affect the average American. I think the few people are going to see their taxes go up are the wealthier people. particularly wealthier people who don't own their own business. But even then, I tell those people, and they agree, that the overall improvement outweigh the fact that some wealthy people are going to have to pay more in wages. Now, the average person's tax are going to go down, though. Particularly, I would say, anybody making under $100,000 a year. So those people are going to get a direct benefit in addition to the indirect benefit of the improving economy.
But there have been all the critics who argue that the bill will mostly benefit the wealthy, including members.
That's just not true, and I want to deal with that. I don't know how they can possibly say that. I mean, we are lowering the marginal rates for people, you know, making under $100,000, making under $200,000 a year. We are increasing the standard deduction, which solely benefits the non-wealthy. The Republicans who voted against the tax bill were Republicans from high tax states who were hearing from their wealthier members. It is true some of the wealthier people from places like California, New York are going to pay higher taxes. But if you would say what group of people are going to pay higher taxes under this bill, it's very wealthy people from states with high income taxes. And if you talk to the congressmen who voted against the bill, their major concern was their high income people from those states. So the only people who I don't think are going to receive an increase in tax under this bill are, like I said, the wealthy people, the high income people from high tax states. Of course, there are people out there who don't pay any tax at all. Obviously, if you're making $15,000 a year and paying no income tax now, you know, you can't really cut something out of nothing.
Congressional Republicans weren't able to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act this year, but the tax bill eliminates the individual mandate, the ACA measure that requires most people to buy health insurance or pay a penalty. After successfully repealing the individual mandate, do you see Congress returning to health care in the coming year?
Oh, yeah, they're going to have to. And I'd be surprised if something isn't taken up on a bipartisan basis sometime in the next 4 months. If you don't mind, I'd like to comment on the tax bill one more time.
Sure, sure.
Because I heard Scott Ross talking. The challenge the Republicans have is just to try to get out the truth. I think what happened is, and I sat in a lot of meetings on this bill, overwhelmingly, the Republicans again and again in these meetings were concerned that we weren't doing enough for the middle class. And again, that was the primary goal in these meetings. And again, the Republicans did not care about hyper wealthy. That's why, for example, you don't get an increased mortgage deduction if your mortgage is more than $750,000, because the Republicans were not concerned about people who had a house worth more than $750,000. Our challenge politically is you're going to have people like Scott Ross out there just lying. I think they were hoping the bill would give big tax cuts to the wealthy and nothing to the average guy. And when the Republicans did nothing but look out for the average guy, people like Scott Ross just keep lying.
Scott Ross seemed to be very, we're up against a break here. So Scott Ross was also very pessimistic about this whole notion that profits will trickle down to the average worker. Do you think that will be the case very quickly?
Well, first of all, the average worker is getting a direct benefit because his taxes are going down. Okay, so you don't even have to worry about this so-called trickle-down thing. But secondly, of course, with an improved business climate, it is obvious businesses hire more people. Do you really think that your profits can go up and you don't hire more people, you have more people going into business? Does he think we'd be better off with businesses losing money? Doesn't he realize that if businesses lose money or not competitive or they have expenses they don't have abroad, that that's when business contracts?
Let's press the pause button here, rewinding the clock on 2017. U.S. Representative Glenn Grothman is with us unpacking the major political developments. You can weigh in as well, 800-642-1234. We'll be back after a check of the news. President Trump was sworn in January, but as we close 2017, allegations that his campaign colluded with the Russian government to beat Democrat Hillary Clinton persist, and his administration continues to deny them. Robert Mueller was named the special counsel overseeing the investigation and was thus far charged four people related to the Trump administration and campaign. The Mueller investigation is one of a number of components of 2017 in politics. We're looking at a number of these stories with U.S. Representative Glenn Grothman, who represents Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District. He's with us on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You can join in with 2017 political milestones at 800-642-1234. Big milestones here at the end of the year with a new tax plan. What do you make of it? Was the tax code overhaul the top story of the year? Or was it perhaps immigration, DACA, or the Me Too movement? Add your voice, 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to the phones now with Nate, who joins us from Milwaukee. Hi, Nate.
Hi, thank you. And I was just going to react in part to one of the comments made, or say two things about the tax plan as it's being rolled out. If you're about to inherit $5 million or less, the estate tax didn't apply to you. That the amount of money you can inherit is getting even bigger. I'm pretty sure it's going to benefit some wealthy folks. Also, the design of this in relation to state and local taxes originally included a $0 exemption for state and local taxes, which basically means that those states that take care of their citizens were getting punished for it. And if you take a look at where the money going to the federal government comes from, it's actually from a lot of the states that do that. And the states that do a bad job of taking care of their citizens are actually on the takers end of taking money from the federal government. So, to borrow Republican phraseology, this was an attempt to take from the makers and give to the takers, and on top of that, reward the states that don't really care about their own citizens.
Well, let's get Representative Grothman to respond there to Nate. And Nate had several things going on there. How would you respond, Representative?
Yeah. Well, this is another example where the Republicans went out of the way to primarily protect the middle class and not the ultra wealthy. We are allowing a deduction for state and local taxes up to $10,000. And the vast majority of people in our society are paying less than $10,000 in and combined income and property tax. We cut off the deduction above that amount. So you're very wealthy people, and you can argue this was right or wrong, but you're very wealthy people are not getting the full deduction, whereas your average guy is getting a deduction. And having sat in the room with Kevin Brady talking about what he was trying to get to, and I'll tell you, a lot of very wealthy people are very mad at the Republican plan for this reason. We did allow the deduction for your average person. You know, your average person in the state of Wisconsin, maybe paying $3,000, $4,000, or $5,000 in property taxes, maybe paying $2,000 or $3,000 in income taxes. They will continue to get the entire deduction there. The other thing I'll come back at, as far as, and I'm sorry, this was kind of your prior question. Sometimes one of the greatest things that I think we've seen is not what's been done, but what's no longer being done. You know, on the break there, you played a little bit from Barack Obama. Barack Obama had Al Sharpton to the White House over 80 times when he was president. And I don't think you hear of Al Sharpton coming to the White House so much anymore. I think Al Sharpton was a very divisive person. I think if your listeners are not familiar with him, they should, you know, Google things like Freddie's Fashion Mart or the Crown Heights situation. And I think it is good that we now have a president who doesn't seem to think it's such a great idea to hold up Al Sharpton like our past president.
However, on the flip side, would talk show host Sean Hannity, who is quite the confidant of President Trump, would he be a divisive figure?
Are you comparing Sean Hannity to Al Sharpton?
The comparison there is President Trump.
And Al, you realize Al Sharpton has inspired people in some of these areas to actually wind up being murdered. I mean, Sean Hannity is just a political figure. He's a political conservative figure, but I don't think Sean Hannity has ever inspired people to go out and riot, go out and kill people. And there's no comparison there. Any president is going to invite people over, journalists over. I'm sure Sean Hannity's been to the White House, but Sean Hannity is just a journalist. He's not somebody like an Al Sharpton. And it always bothered me when you see pictures of Al Sharpton in the White House. I think it's a good thing that it seems we've put an end to that.
Well, let's keep on the 2017 track here. Nate, thanks for your call. Let's go to Jane, who joins us from Suamico. Hi, Jane.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. Representative Grossman, I have a couple questions for you. If the Republicans are so interested in the middle class, then why do the individual tax cuts expire after 10 years where the corporate tax rate cuts are permanent and the health insurance rates are expected to go up by 10% and 13 million people are going to lose their health insurance because of the removing the mandate for health insurance? So how are we going to save money if our health insurance rates are going to go up 10%?
Okay. There were a couple questions there. On the health insurance mandate, there are a lot of people who do not want to have health insurance. They feel it's not a good investment for them. So that's just a function of freedom. I've known people who've gone without health insurance. I believe there was a while when I was in my 20s where I didn't have health insurance. So, to me, that's just a matter of freedom. I don't think there's a bad thing. We do not like the fact that health insurance rates keep going up. We think they've gone up a lot under Obamacare. That's one of the reasons why so many of us ran on getting rid of it. I do believe some other sort of plan, a bipartisan plan we put in there sometime in the next 4 or 5 months. I forget what the first question your listener had was.
And Jane was wondering when the individual mandate goes away.
She was talking about the personal income taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I expect the cut in personal income taxes to continue on. Even when Barack Obama was president and the Democrats controlled both houses, even though the personal income tax that was instituted by President Bush was set to expire, it was continued for all but the very wealthy people. And I would expect the same thing to be true in this case. We wish it could have been made permanent. We had some problems with longstanding bipartisan rules in the Senate that prevented us from making them permanent as we wanted to. But the Senate decided to go with the bipartisan rules rather than making a partisan play and changing those rules so we could have made them permanent at this time. But I fully expect to eventually be voting to make these personal tax cuts permanent as well.
Representative Grossman, Jane, thanks so much for the call, by the way. Representative, do you see a momentum shift in 2018 ahead of us? Now that this tax code overhaul has passed, do you see Congress coming together in 2018?
I hope they come together. I had reached out to some Democrats and hoped they could get more involved on the estate tax situation. And I'd like to think I have a good relationship with the Democrats, but I think a lot of them were hoping to run against the tax cut and didn't want to make it bipartisan. So they didn't want to get that involved in it. I do believe some health care reforms will be put in place on a bipartisan basis. I believe there will be a technical correction bill, as there always is, as a follow-up to these tax cuts, and I expect that to be bipartisan. I think there's one thing that may be a little more partisan, that is I think we're looking for some welfare reforms. There's going to be a disagreement, I think, between Paul Ryan and President Trump on one hand and Mitch McConnell on the other as to whether we need welfare reform at this time. But the President Trump has a strong platform. He's got the bully pulpit there. And I hope we're going to see some welfare reform as well sometime in the next 6 months.
Well, before we let you go, let's talk a little bit about one other milestone in 2017, the Robert Mueller investigation, the special counsel to the investigation into potential collusion between the 2016 Trump campaign and Russians meddling in the election. The president has said he would not fire Mueller, though he has consistently called the investigation a witch hunt. What are your thoughts on what went down in 2017 in the Mueller investigation?
Well, I think this. You know, we had a situation in which Bill Clinton received incredibly high payments for giving speeches. We had a situation in which Hillary Clinton voted to allow, you know, a lot more Russian involvement in our natural resources. And I've always felt, given the fact that Bill Clinton would be getting such high speaking fees at a time when his wife was Secretary of the State, would perhaps mean that the Russians would prefer the Clintons to be in the White House. Obviously, I think they take an interest in trying to mix up or make American politics more divisive.
But is this a witch hunt?
I will say this. I think in Washington, we spend an incredible small amount of time talking about it. As a matter of fact, we virtually never do talk about it. And then I will tell you, when I talk to people back in the district, and I'm getting out and about this week, next week, running around the 6th Congressional District, nobody talks about this. They're concerned about the taxes. They're concerned about the welfare. I think they're a little bit concerned about overspending.
Kitchen table discussions, is that right?
Correct. This is not something I think that is on the mind of the average Wisconsinite. And quite frankly, I don't think it's on the mind of the average congressman. I think at the end, Donald Trump is going to come through this okay, and I am not certain at all that Russia would have preferred that Donald Trump win this election.
Representative Grothman, thanks for helping us rewind on the year.
We always love to help you guys out. Call anytime.
Republican U.S. Representative Glenn Grothman represents Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District in the East Central part of the state. In the first half of the hour, we talked with Scott Ross, Executive Director of One Wisconsin Now. By the way, NPR plans to announce its winner of its March Madness-style Year in Politics bracket on Friday afternoon. This hour of the morning show was produced by Colleen Leahy and Nyjah Ellison. Dave Protraz provided technical direction. I'm Kate Archer-Kent on the Ideas Network.